In today's first reading, we see that the Lord came to visit Abraham and Sarah. As I have mentioned many times before, the importance of hospitality in the ancient world, and indeed still today in the Middle East, cannot be underestimated. At first sight, Abraham made a greeting in supplication, bowing low to the ground, and then implored the Lord to stay and rest, bathe, and eat. And yet this was insufficient. He mobilized everyone under his charge to prepare food from scratch, including the presentation of a choice steer. And perhaps as a sign of ultimate respect, rather than use servants, which would have been the norm, he personally did the serving. For their service, the Lord rewarded Abraham and Sarah with a son. And recall that they were well beyond childbearing years, making this a remarkable miracle indeed. And so we see that service to the Lord is incredibly important, so much so that those who do it may be richly rewarded. Now let's fast forward to the present. All men desiring to enter the Dominican order must spend a single year, the first year, in an institution called the novitiate, which in the Western United States is in St. Dominic's in San Francisco. It is a time where we separate from the world and learn about all things Dominican. Most of our time is spent in prayer and study and in contemplation. However, one day a week, we get let out and we get to do an active ministry, in part because our novice master needed a day off. So each Monday, my classmates, Brother Justin and Brother Joseph Mary, and I would trudge down to the AIDS hospice run by the Sisters of the Missionaries of Charity, St. Mother Teresa's order. And while I had encountered the sisters before, I had never actually worked with them. And to say that it was a treat was not exactly the way I'd put it, at least at the beginning. On my first day, I was super eager to help. We drove up in our van, hopped out, met with the superior of the community, and inquired how we might best help them. She said, "Well, you can help with the cleaning, starting with the floors." And I said, "Okay, where can I find the vacuum cleaner?" "Well, I don't actually have a vacuum cleaner, but you can use this broom." At which point she pulled out a tattered stick with a few connected brambles that would have been considered old 50 years ago. Now, the rationale of the sisters is that they should never use tools that wouldn't be found in any of their houses all over the world. A house in Calcutta, for example, certainly would not have a vacuum cleaner, and therefore the houses in the United States shouldn't either. At least that was the party line, but that wasn't it at all. Now, the story of Abraham tells us that service to others, especially to the Lord, is important and indeed even rewarding. And there's no question that I felt in a small way that I was doing my part in serving the AIDS and other hospice patients. My reward was that it actually felt good to help others. Yet when the sisters handed me that broom, I was perplexed. "Are you kidding? This is going to take me all day." And that was precisely the point. By wanting to use a vacuum cleaner, it was clear that I wanted the task done as quickly as possible. We all see utility in that. Yet by doing it faster, who benefits from my efficiency? Well, you might be tempted to think that the more efficient I am in my work, the more things that I could get done. True that. But consider this: the more efficiently I cleaned the floors, the quicker I could complete my tasks, and the quicker I could be done and leave. How exactly does this benefit the residents who were there on hospice? Yes, by using a broom slowed me down. But from the residents' perspective, I was spending more time for them in a useful way to them. I wasn't merely trying to get out of there as quickly as possible. I was bearing a cross for their sake. And see how this change in perspective alters the utility of my actions. So let's visit today's gospel reading. Like Abraham before her, Martha scurries around making certain that Jesus had everything he could possibly need as a guest. If she did just a fraction of what Abraham did by herself, that would have been a lot of work. And this is one of the reasons why she is so incensed that all Mary was doing was sitting on the floor. Martha's first mistake was to compare her act of service with Mary's act of sitting on the floor. Martha's doing all the work, and Mary's seemingly doing nothing. The problem here is that Martha is assuming that her love of the Lord in service is on the same level of Mary's love of the Lord with her mere presence. Both are valid, yet they are different. Now, most of us find it very difficult to read this recounting of the story of Martha and Mary, and that's reasonable. That's because many of us, if not all, identify with Martha, and we're perplexed when Jesus tells her that Mary has the better part. After all, we're Americans. We know how to prepare. We know how to get things done. We know how to present things. We know this because we are rewarded for it. The United States has more entrepreneurs, more small businesses, more business students than any other country. We believe that despite even small setbacks, our hard work will reward us, just like God rewarded Abraham and Sarah. No pain, no gain. That's the mantra known by virtually everyone. And don't get me wrong, there is a sort of streak of inaction in all of us, and this helps us to identify with Mary, but perhaps not in the way that Scripture tells us. We see Mary as being there and not having to do the work that Martha is doing, and at least that's the way I see it. I'd happily have someone do all my work while I relax and be the recipient. If that were the point of this story, it would be a very sad reflection on Mary. And yet, what does Jesus do? He says, Mary has chosen the better part, and it will not be taken from her. That doesn't make any sense. Why in the world would he do that? Well, what we're missing here is that Mary is actually doing something, and it is much more than sitting there while Martha is scurrying about. If we gloss over this reading, we miss a very important word. Let's go over the text. Mary sat beside the Lord at his feet, listening to him speak. The operative word is listening. When we listen to someone, what are we doing? We're giving them our undivided attention. We do this out of respect, and we do this out of love. So if we believe that we are created in the image and likeness of God and that God is love, then really we are called to love. And while listening doesn't encompass all the aspects of love, it does play an important part. And for you teenagers or even some of us adults, listening is not just watching the lips move or even hearing just the sounds coming out. But rather, it's interpreting what's being said, giving it calm thought, and then realizing that what the person said is important, that the person is important, and that regardless of what the person says, their voice merits proper consideration. These are truly important lessons for us to learn, because I see many of us work very, very hard to provide for our families. But are we overproviding? We sometimes commute 2 to 3 hours a day. Perhaps we work a lot of overtime. We send our kids to camps, to sports events, to parties. We smother our kids with gifts, with clothes, with electronics. And we plan and execute trips and vacations to far-off places. Now, none of these things are intrinsically bad. In fact, I kind of like them. But consider what it can cost us. Do we work insane hours, giving up our precious time with the family in order to provide them with these things? Often the best thing that we can give is the gift of ourselves, the presence of one human being to another, the ever-important skill of listening to what another person has to offer. Kids may have all the material things that their hearts desire, but things are just things. What they truly want is a stable relationship with their siblings and with their parents, and that we cannot buy. Again, we as Americans have great difficulty with this. Efficiency is in our national psyche, but it is not unique to us. In point of fact, it is a trait of being human, and Jesus knew this and is why he pointed it out. For it is better to be poor amongst family and friends than it is to be rich and lonely. And hardly anyone would disagree with that. That's not to say that we in an affluent society are all lonely, but sometimes we get our priorities a little bit crossed. And it's easy to see that many members of our society are lonely, a fact that was not lost on Mother Teresa, and she actually told us so. Consider what often happens to our elderly. In many cultures, our elderly come and live with their kids once they can no longer sustain themselves. Often this is done for economic reasons since there are no other alternatives. But this is not the norm in our culture, mostly because we can't afford them the time. They get in our way. It takes effort and the attention that it requires. Can we offer them the ministry of presence, to be there for them, to listen to them, and to love them? Naturally, there are very good reasons for skilled nursing and 24/7 services, things that we couldn't even do if we tried. But all too often, out of sight becomes out of mind, and that leads to loneliness and sadness for both parties. With this example, and actually others, we can see that service to others is love, and it is rewarding, but there's a higher love that Jesus speaks of, and that's to give people the dignity they deserve, which was what Mary was doing. And had I known this 10 years ago, I would have never asked for that vacuum cleaner.